Hello and welcome to this edition of the Golf Shadow Podcast with Rex and Lav. Well, if anyone was ambivalent about golf in the Olympics, not anymore. The bogey-free 62 on Sunday. Scottie Scheffler is the new Olympic gold medalist. Tommy Fleetwood held on to take silver. And Hideki Matsuyama, who lost the 7-for-1 playoff for bronze in Tokyo, gets his redemption with bronze in Paris. There were hero moments. There were stunning miscues. There was Scottie Scheffler crying atop the podium while they played the national anthem. Rex, after about 10 hours of live television today between the broadcast and then a supersized Golf Central, are you still buzzing from that riveting finale, or have you already moved on to the women's competition?
No, I'm still buzzing because it was amazing. One of the hits I did in the late show, it was kind of a collection of sound from different players that I got throughout the course of the day, kind of talking about the experience. And I went back to the idea of 8 years ago when golf went back in the Olympics in Rio. No one knew what to expect. It was very much an unknown commodity. And you got there and some of the game's top stars opted out for whatever their reasons are. We kept having the debates about where does a medal rank in the hierarchy of the things you can do in professional golf. It just didn't seem to fit into what professional golf was. Now, fast forward 8 years, and of all the players I talked to today, it was clear that Olympic golf matters now. It matters to the top players. It certainly matters to the crowds. I don't know if you didn't tune in, then you missed one of the best shows in golf all year long, if not the last decade. It was something you and I both covered the Ryder Cup here back in 2018. And I think you and I both will attest, like, that was really, really cool. And I don't know if anything can fairly be compared to what they did with that grandstand around the first tee. I think it was 4,000 or 5,000 people in that thing. And it was off the hook. I mean, it was just an amazing scene. But the scene around 18, especially, seems like every single day when Victor Perez finished up, it was 10 times that. And everybody was going nuts. And then you had that element today during one of the breaks during Live From Tonight, and not to sort of go off on a tangent here, but George Savarikas, the host, asked Brandon Chambly and Paige McKenzie, how could today have been better? And you can't start splitting hairs or splitting nits. I think that's what you call it.
Picking nits.
Picking nits. I've never even heard that before. You can't start picking nits if you want to. And yes, I would have loved to have seen Victor Perez somehow make a birdie on 17 or 18 to force a playoff, and suddenly all of France is there for a playoff. That would have been so cool. But man, when you look at all the elements that we got, we had Scottie Scheffler being full Scottie Scheffler and just shooting 29 on his second night to come from essentially nowhere. He was outside the medal. He was getting no medals to suddenly running away with the gold medal. That was so cool. You had Jon Rahm to go the other way, who was 5 shots up with 8 holes to play on the other side of it, and him just completely imploding. And we can touch on him later. And then everything else in between, even Hideki Matsuyama, which from my perspective makes my job a little bit harder than it probably needs to be, because there is the language barrier and you try to crack the egg and you try to get the emotions and you try to get an understanding of what this means to him. And it's really, really difficult for both of us. If I cared, to be fair, I would learn Japanese. So let's be clear about that. But to come from the heartbreak 3 years ago in Tokyo of losing a playoff for bronze at home in Japan to now earning a medal. And he actually did give a really good answer when I asked him, what is this going to mean to golf in Japan? And he's not really the type of person that does that, but he gave a really, you know, sort of a sprawling answer about the idea that, yes, this is what I was trying to accomplish in Tokyo. And then Tommy Fleetwood. And I love the dichotomy of my first question to him was, well, how do you process this? Is it the joy of winning a silver medal, or is it the pain of losing a gold medal? Because it was a little bit of both. I think all of those things makes this such a special event.
I mean, you'd really have to pick nits to find any sort of flaw in what happened, or even the outcome. Like, even the outcome felt oddly satisfying, where a Scottie Scheffler, who is the number one player in the world, this is essentially like a Simone Biles or a Kay Ledecky or a Leon Marchand winning the gold medal, like the best in their sport prevailing on the biggest stage in sports. Like, that's very satisfying. Tommy Fleetwood has been as good as anyone in the biggest events, not yet winning one of those. I think it was somewhat fitting that he gets the silver medal as well. And then Hideki Matsuyama, who is probably, Rex, on sort of that borderline for the Hall of Fame at this point, 9-time PGA Tour winner, has won a Masters, has been a generationally great player, the first male player from Japan to win a men's major championship. That's all great. And obviously getting the redemption with the bronze. I think this Sunday and this tournament worked for three reasons. One is this tournament really reminded me of the Players' Championship, where you have like a top heavy field that is competing, and it seems like the cream always sort of rises to the top. You have a golf course in Le Golf National, very similar to TPC Sawgrass, and that there seem to be like doubles all over the place. And the potential for having that on the back nine is certainly immense. I think some of the architecture geeks may hate this golf course because it sort of forces players into very similar shots and decision-making. It's not like some players are hitting driver, other players are hitting three iron and four iron. They're basically all playing from similar spots in the fairways and into the greens. But I do think it's undoubtedly a compelling venue for tournament play. But I think one of the biggest reasons, Rex, why this worked is there's a benefit to having more at stake than just the winner or the gold medal or the top position. I think there's something to be said for having this podium finish where there's more compelling subplots than just the very tippy top of the leaderboard. It actually made me wonder if this is something that professional golf should try to mimic. Because when you look at what the new future of the PGA Tour is going to look like and the future landscape, there's been a lot of talk of comparing this top level golf to Formula One, right? Where every sort of event is a happening and it brings in 50,000 fans and it's a great party and maybe the competition is a little bit of an afterthought. That's what Formula One does, where you don't just have the winner, but you have the podium as well. I think it makes it so much more interesting when you're fighting it out for third, and maybe fourth place doesn't matter as much when you're just sort of vacuuming up points.
It's a good point, and I think that is what makes this event so compelling, because you have the content times three, essentially, is what you're talking about. So we're not talking only about a winner and a loser anymore. Now, all of a sudden, there's the compelling arguments. And at one point, I think I did the math. There were 13 guys within three shots of bronze medal. And suddenly, all of these scenarios are cropping up. And to your point, I think the golf course was interesting to me because it did give up some scores. And I'll give Kerry Haig, who the PGA of America setup man who set this golf course up, I'll give him credit. He allowed the players to go out and to shoot some scores. And we saw two 62s for the week and a couple 63s. And he didn't hold them back. He wasn't trying to turn this into a U.S. Open or major championship test. That being said, you had to play those last three holes. And as we've seen, it was really, really difficult to make any kind of move over those last three holes. Victor Perez tried everything in his book to pull something off. I guess the problem I would say to counter, and I tend to agree, like the reason this is special is because the fixation goes three deep instead of just that top spot. But it's because it's once every 4 years. And I think that's what makes it special.
I think
if
the novelty,
did this every week, I don't know if it would resonate the same.
Yeah, the novelty probably wears off. I think more to the point, it's really hard to finish in the top three of a PGA Tour event. And yet we sort of become numb to that, or it sort of doesn't matter because it's just the champion and he wins $3.6 million for winning a signature event and everyone else is sort of forgotten. I think it's a nice little wrinkle. I think you're right, where if this happens 15 to 20 times a year, you know, maybe some of the luster wears off. It hasn't worn off in Formula One. That sport's popularity continues to grow. I do think there's something to the concept where, you know, there's more to the week than just the winner.
And I do think it's interesting because we had a member of the bronze medal winning U.S. gymnastics team at the golf course, Paul Juda, on Thursday. And he was so excited and he was sitting there talking about, he was kind of comparing the sports, and it was a fun conversation because this dude does things physically that most human beings can't do. And he immediately went to the idea that I don't know how they do what they do. I don't know how they're able to do that with the golf ball. And he kind of stopped and he goes, do you think any of them can do what I do? And I was like, no, they can't. None of them can. Of course not. Like you're a singular athlete. That's ridiculous. But the conversation turned to the idea that I go, when did you start thinking about the Olympics and maybe winning a medal? 6 years old was the answer he gave me. 6 years old. This guy's been thinking about this. He's in his sixth year right now at the University of Michigan. So I'm guessing he's somewhere around 25, 26 years old, maybe a little bit younger than that. This just came up for most golfers at the max 8 years ago, probably closer to 6 years if you're Scottie Scheffler, 3 years, maybe whatever the case may be. So I just think there is a difference of what it means to win a bronze medal, because we can sit here and have the stupid, you know, sports radio debate about, wow, maybe we're celebrating too much over a bronze medal. It's a third place finish. To your point, I think this is a really good example of how hard it is to finish third on a PGA Tour event. Like, you have to play so well, and it really just boils down to you didn't get a break or two that the guy that won.
Yeah, this certainly felt like a monumental moment for Olympic golf, where, you know, so many top players did not turn up in 2016, either because of indifference, maybe the fear of the Zika virus in 2021. There were so many restrictions because of COVID, and it wasn't really the true Olympic experience. Rory McIlroy told you afterward, Rex, this was one of the best tournaments he has ever been a part of in what is a long and decorated career. And the Olympics has the potential, maybe in 2028, maybe further down the road, where it's right up there with either a major championship in terms of importance or up there with the Ryder Cup in terms of the experience and what it's like to actually be a part of if you're a competitor.
Well, and I don't know that we get there, I guess was the point. And Rory had a really good comment on Saturday afternoon when he was scrumming with the reporters. The idea being that someone asked him, can you compare this to a major? And he sort of thought about it and he goes, no, this is more fun. Like, yes, the crowds are great, and yes, the competition is intense, but it was more enjoyable. And every player I talked to that came off the course today sort of echoed a version of those same remarks that, yeah, you want to win. And I guess the easiest way for me to compare this is Rory McIlroy stumbled at the U.S. Open at Pinehurst and made some bad decisions and some bad swings, and we all know what he did. He raced out of the parking lot without talking to the media. He stumbled coming down the stretch today and cost himself a chance at a medal for the second time in the Olympics. And he stopped and talked. I'm not saying that's a reflection on how important this event is to him or not. I'm saying that's a reflection of the vibe of this event, that he was fine. Like, yes, he was really heartbroken. I think John Rahm is a much better example. If you can listen to that interview, like, he was gutted. Like, he knew, and it wasn't even for him. He was, I let my country down. All of the things that you hear from the other athletes, you were hearing from John Rahm. It's just, it was more enjoyable. It's just as intense. And I think you're right. It's going to mean as much as a major someday in golf. I don't know if it's going to be 2028 or beyond, but it is such a different vibe.
I think the vibe has to do with, you know, maybe it's still new. Maybe they're still kind of grappling with the import of this. I think it's also that these athletes are basically reflections or spokespersons for their individual countries. And there is not just an obligation, but sort of a necessity to be front-facing and to represent them in the best way possible. I bet you in 4 days you had zero players who declined interview requests. Is that right? Like, if you wanted to talk to John Rahm after his third round, he wasn't blowing you off. If you wanted to get an athlete, could you get him?
I want to tiptoe around this one a little bit. I'm glad you brought it up, actually. If I wanted to talk to John Rahm, I talked to John Rahm. Or he was fine coming giving yeah. Andrew. I think I talked to Rory McIlroy all 4 days. I think I talked to Scottie Scheffler all 4 days. The one athlete that refused multiple interview requests throughout the week was CT Pan. Don't know why.
Oh.
Including with the Golf Channel and NBC Sports and others. I don't know why, and I think it's a growing trend with him for some reason. Again, have no idea why. I wanted to try to interview him at the Canadian Open last month over, if you remember, his caddy Fluff Cowan went down in the final round. And it was like a weird deal where he had like four different caddies, and we wanted to try to talk to him, me and a group of reporters, and he said no. It was weird.
Oh, I'm sure CT has a very good reason. Otherwise,
you asked, I answered.
That would be quite a head scratcher. Before we get into, Rex, some of the collapses that made this Sunday such compelling television. Obviously, we have to talk about the gold medalist first and foremost, Scottie Scheffler. I think most reasonable people thought he still had a shot at the podium. I don't think anyone would have anticipated he could have leapfrogged all of those great players and snatched the gold. Six shots back with Scottie Scheffler heading into the back nine, ends up winning without a playoff after his back nine 29. I talked about the Players' Championship and how this tournament, how this golf course sort of reminds me of that. This final round, Rex, also reminded me of Scottie's 2024 at the Players' Championship when he shot 64 in that final round, again, leapfrogged all those great players ahead of him. This was even better of a performance, tied the course record at Le Golf National, and now is etched in history as an Olympic gold medalist. What stood out to you about Scottie's round and maybe even the emotions that he showed afterward?
He was stuck in neutral for 3.5 days. essentially, is what this boils down to. And then I get, again, I talked to him after every round, and he wasn't particularly pleased with his swing. I don't think he was particularly pleased with what he was getting out of his game. And we all know the standard that he holds himself to. And you're right, that Scottie Scheffler thing, whatever the magic is, it clicked on that final nine. That was an amazing 29 and not easy conditions. I keep coming back to the idea that, okay, there was 262s and some low scores, but that golf course was not easy by any stretch, because if it was, all of those other top players around him would have done the same thing. If you look at Xander Schauffele, and he's probably a name we weren't going to bring up, because I don't know if you would, I don't know if you would look at me and say, yes, Xander Schauffele collapsed. I don't think so. He was just kind of stuck in neutral for most of Sunday, and he got passed. Is it probably a better way of saying that? John Rahm, he collapsed. I'll give you that 100%. Rory McIlroy, whatever it is he was trying to do on 15, you can even call that a collapse. But I think Xander just didn't have that back nine that Scotty did. I don't think many people outside of Scotty and Victor Perez had that back nine. And you're right. Like, once he got into that mode, it kind of had the Tiger feel to it, where suddenly he starts making birdies. And it was really hard. The way they do the leaderboards on this golf course, you have to look really hard because they disappear fast. So I'm not quite sure how many guys were even registering it. But it was obvious by what was going on the golf course that Scotty was making a move. I was taken by the emotion during the medal ceremony and, you know, during the national anthem, because I find Scotty not to be an outwardly emotional person, when at least when he's on the golf course. I'm sure when he's alone with his wife and his family, he's very emotional. He kind of talked about the idea that this was different than other wins, because you're really ushered around fast. Like, you don't have a lot of time to process things, and he didn't, and he got out there, and there was a lot of emotion. I will say it was a fun moment when he finally gets done with the award ceremony, and he kind of comes back up to the area where we are and starts doing the interviews. And all week long, I don't know if you noticed, but Jay Lindbergh supplied the clothes for the U.S. team. And their clothes are a little aggressive, based more so aggressive than probably what we're used to seeing Scottie Scheffler wear. And so throughout the week, I kind of had some snide comments just about, never seen you in white pants before. And that stripe is kind of on the bold side. And we were just having fun with it. And so he came up, and when he stood in front of me, I immediately said that, only reason you wanted to win is put the Nike jumpsuit back on, isn't it? And he starts dying laugh, and he goes, that's exactly it. That's exactly what happened. There was emotion that we're not used to seeing from him. And I think he was as stuck as anyone trying to process it, because I felt like I started with the obvious question that you've accomplished so much in your career. Where does this rank? And he kind of struggled with the question.
He hates comparison questions. It's like an immediate default answer for him, where I don't really like to compare accomplishments. I'm just trying to stay in the moment, and I'm very pleased to win this one.
And I appreciate that. And I know where he's coming from. And he, as much as he hates that, if you ask him about something specific in the moment, he'll give you a very elaborate, well thought out answer. But you're right, he didn't like it, because what we want to know is, man, you've had yourself a year. You've won six, counting this, seven times, including the Masters and the Players' Championship. Give me some sort of hierarchy. And I actually walked away from that interview feeling a little empty, because he wasn't playing along.
No, he certainly wasn't playing along. We're going to get into where his season sort of ranks in recent times here in just a second. I was struck not by the emotion, because Scotty has cried multiple times this year. It seems like every time he says his wife's name Meredith in some sort of interview, it's almost immediate waterwork. He's not quite on the Steve Stricker level where, you know, it's a win and automatic tears, but he's certainly in somewhat of that same stratosphere. I was struck, Rex, on the back nine of Scotty as a player, as a competitor, and how he's able to do things that his peers cannot. I think back to the 14th hole, which was the pivotal par five, lay on the back nine. It's the hole that John Rahm double bogeyed to really torpedo his chances. Scottie Scheffler also missed left of that green and was able to get it up and down, hit it to a foot. I think back to 15, the hole that torpedoed Roy McIlroy's chances, hit it short into the water, made a double bogey, and missed out on a medal that way. What does Scottie Scheffler do with the wedge in his hand? He hits it to kick in range to a foot. I think about what happened on 17. Scottie Scheffler missed in the left rough with his drive, almost the exact same spot that Tommy Fleetwood would do so a couple of groups later. Scottie Scheffler hits it on the green to about 15, 20 feet, rolls in that putt for what is the decisive stroke. Tommy Fleetwood, in almost the exact same position, is unable to control his spin, hits it over the back, a very sort of touchy spot, makes bogey, and loses the gold medal that way. Like he's so complete. He's so gifted. And he just has, whether it's the shot quality and controlling his spin, whether it's the smarts and the golf IQ of playing where it needs to be, whether it's sort of the touch on and around the greens, like he just has a package that other players do not have. And I think that's what sort of the back nine underscored. And I think it was a fitting capstone to what has been such a remarkable season for Scottie Scheffler, that he was able to pull off the shots that his fellow competitors could not do. I talked about the season wreck. So this is not an official PGA Tour victory, but for the sake of comparison, let's call this now seven victories for Scottie Scheffler. I was trying to think about recent seasons in the last 15, 20 years. I mean, this is rapidly moving to, if not the top of the list, and at least the top two or three. What else comes to mind when it comes to the completeness now of Scottie Scheffler's season as the FedEx Cup playoffs here begin in 2 weeks' time?
I have to look at the totals. I'm not quite sure how many total times he won, but he made a good run at the single season Grand Slam. That stands out to me. 2006 Tiger Woods, that one stands out. But you're right. I mean, it's a historic season, and he's not done. You would think the places we're going, where he has played well in the past, we're going to Memphis in a week. He's played well there before. We're going to East Lake 2 weeks after that. He's played well there before. It's the conversation. And I was so excited when this got brought up on live on Saturday night. Like, I'm here for all of the conversation about the Xander Scottie Player of the Year debate. And I sort of made a reference to that as we were watching the closing ceremony, and there were some tour officials around, and they were all like, and the idea was Scottie probably wrapped it up with this one. Like, I don't know what else can happen. And they did point out that, yes, if Xander were to sweep the playoffs or win two of the three and win the FedEx Cup, that it is a conversation. But I will do, like, this is silly, stupid, you know, golf writer math that I'm doing out in my head. So it right now, it's two majors to one major. Xander has two, Scottie has one, and a Players' Championship. Between a Players' Championship and, I would say, this Olympic gold medal, that fractions out to a major in my mind. This is kind of
golf writer math. Yeah, I don't really know the math. It is wild to think about Scottie Scheffler having one of the best seasons, again, in the past 15, 20 years. I think about Spieth's year in 2015. That was five wins, four runners-up. He finished in the top four in all four major championships. His strokes gained numbers weren't quite as impressive as Scottie Scheffler, so like the quality of his good wasn't quite as good. I think back to 2009 for Tiger. That was zero major championships, but six wins overall. I think the best comparison is actually 2007. That was seven wins for Tiger, including a major championship. Also had runner-up finishes in the Masters and U.S. Open that year. Tiger strokes gain numbers that year were insane, plus three. Scottie Scheffler's about 2.7 at the moment. That was otherworldly golf. I think that's the best comp at the moment. I don't think that this wraps up the Player of the Year debate. I do think that PGA Tour players in particular hold their season-long FedEx Cup title with such importance and place such a value and a premium on that if Xander Schauffele were to, say, win the BMW Championship as well as the Tour Championship, I do think he will get a significant significant portion of the vote, if not the majority. But I think it's going to take that. I think it's going to take two of three playoff titles, including the FedEx Cup, to do so. Of course, Xander Schauffele has played East Lake, which is home of the Tour Championship, better than any player over the past 5 years. So you do have to like his chances to do so. I also think, Rex, that the format at the Tour Championship actually works against Xander Schauffele in this scenario, where Scottie has had by far and away the best PGA Tour season, and yet he begins with just a two-shot lead, which does not feel right in determining a FedEx Cup champion when the disparity has been so great. But that is the system in which is in place. Let's talk quickly, Rex, about the collapse. We talked about Jon Rahm. He was up by four shots with eight holes to play, ends up missing a playoff, not one, but by two shots for the bronze medal. He said this hurts more than he was anticipating. We saw some double crosses. We saw some missed putts. We saw that ugly double bogey on 14. He's one player. Rory McIlroy in position for the bronze medal, hits it in the water with a wedge on 15, misses spot by a few yards, ends up missing out on the bronze. Xander Schauffele, we touched on him earlier in the podcast, in a position to defend his gold medal, shoots 73. That was the worst score of anyone inside the top 35. Which of those three was the most surprising to you?
Oh, Jon Rahm. without a shadow of a doubt, based not only on what he's done the last few weeks. He played well at Troon, won last week at the LIV event in England, and felt like he had sort of found that form that he'd been missing so far this season. But look what he did on opening nine. He was dominant, pulling away from the field to build that four-shot lead. And you're right, it's the double cross that sort of surprised me, because what you get used to seeing John Rahm when he's playing really well, which is what he's been doing the last couple of weeks, is just holding on and hitting that cut bullet just as hard as he possibly can, knowing it's always going to fall to the right. And when it goes to the left, it's so shocking. And it feels like he's hitting it off the planet. Like it doesn't look right coming off the club face, and it must feel so wildly uncomfortable with him. I'm going to go with Rahm. And I was talking with someone who knows John, who has spoke with John really the last couple of weeks. And this person pointed something out to me last night that I hadn't really thought through. But Sunday was probably going to be the biggest round of John Rahm's year. And by that, he means, and look, we have done this on this podcast, so it doesn't take too much of a stretch to think that other people have done it as well. We are always going to base John Rahm's season on what he did in the major championships. We're going to mention what he does in the LIV events, and certainly winning last week was a step in the right direction. But we were always going to base the major championships because of when he left to go to LIV Golf late last year. Everyone, including us, was curious to see, is that golf good for him? Is he going to be able to transition that type of golf into the intensity that we see at major championships that make him such a formidable player? And what we saw through the first three events, now he was injured at one and missed the cut at the other, but he was a non-factor at all three, is the fairest way of saying it. And then at Royal Troon, he top 10, but I think we can both agree that was a backdoor top 10. Johnny himself said this week he never really had a chance to win. And so coming into this event, this was going to be essentially the event that was going to define his year, fair or not. And this isn't, please don't at me. I don't want to do this with the LIV Golf bots. Like, just leave me alone. Now, I'm just pointing out the obvious here, that this was going to be the last time, at least at a big mainstream event, that the public was going to have their gaze on him. And that if he was able to finish up that and win the gold medal, that was going to define his year, regardless of what he did on LIV Golf. That was going to be, this was the year that John Rahm won that medal. Remember that how cool that was. The fact he didn't get it done today is a pretty big blow.
I mean, that was a full-on collapse. To go from four shots ahead with eight holes to play to then miss bronze by two shots after a back nine 32, it was absolutely stunning. Brandel Chamblee said it's right up there with Rory's miscues over the final hour at Pinehurst in terms of the biggest collapses, or in his words, choke of the year. What do you extrapolate this to mean, Rex? Is John Rahm now a reduced player? Do we now have a large enough sample size over the 7 and 8 months of 2024 after his move to LIV Golf to say that this was a poor move for John Rahm, that he's not the same player that he was, the John Rahm who looked like he was going to be battling Scottie Scheffler for major titles and the biggest titles in the game? Is there now something missing in John Rahm after this move? Has this sort of sabotaged his career in a way that's only going to harm him, not just currently, but even moving forward?
I think there's something missing in his game. I don't think that's unfair to say, just based on what he did at the major championships this year. And again, I'm including Royal Troon, and certainly based on what he did today. Again, we're used to seeing him being a bit machine-like, a bit Scottie Scheffler-like when he gets in this like this, and he wasn't like that at all. I'm not willing to make the jump and saying that, okay, something's missing because he's on LIV Golf. And it's easy to make that extrapolation. I understand where everyone's coming from, that maybe 54 hole golf and shorts and loud music really isn't his thing. I understand that. I make the argument time and time again that if you're a top player when you left the PGA Tour, more times than not, you're still going to be a top player when you get to LIV Golf. Bryson DeChambeau has proven that. Brooks Koepka has proven that. I don't think that's up for debate anymore. I think the bigger issue right now is John Rahm's game simply isn't there. And so then you have to drill down on exactly why that is. I don't know. It might be LIV Golf. I simply don't know.
Yeah, I don't know either. I think you could read some of the signs that John Rahm has suggested, sort of this push to get LIV Golf to go from 54 to 72 holes, as him saying he's sort of unhappy with the current format. The move where now he wants to have a Lynx golf course ahead of the Open Championship, so the LIV players are better suited for that. It seems like John Rahm is sort of trying to push LIV, which is, you know, it's entertaining and it's fun, and it may be a little bit more lighthearted than the week-in and week-out PGA Tour, but they're still trying to take themselves quite seriously as well. I think you can see that he's trying to move that into a more traditional manner, I think you can see with some of the out-course outbursts he's had at the drones or the fans that it doesn't always sit well with him. But as I said on the podcast following the Open Championship, I think John Rahm just picked a bad time to have a down year for him. In no way is he a worse player now. Is his game in worse shape right now? Yes, I think that's indisputable. Keep in mind that John Rahm won the 2023 Masters. He did not win again for the remainder of 2023 and was still out of sorts to begin 2024. He's had the two-way miss going with the driver. He's had the double cross. He thought that he'd sort of solved that, and I think his results indicated that he had made some steps in the right direction after that driver shaft change following the PGA Championship, having a top 10 in a major championship, winning his first live event, and then now being in a great position to win the gold medal. I think it's a bummer that John Rahm is not the player that we saw that he was with his game a year or two ago. But I'm not going to go so far as to say that LIV Golf has ruined John Rahm. He'll never be the same. I still view him as a generationally great player, has the potential to go down as the best European player. But this was certainly shocking to see an alpha like John Rahm perform the way that he did down the stretch, as he did on Sunday in Paris.
And look, I think, you know, we can have a similar conversation about Rory. I asked him specifically about 15. Was it situational? Did he realize where he was on the leaderboard? And he said he just didn't catch the wind right. He didn't elevate the shot the way he wanted to and had got it up, I don't know, another 10 feet in the air. It feels like he would have carried and he'd have had opportunity instead. Turns this into something bad. Clearly, it's not a good sign for Rory. And I think that's something that he's to the season. And I can tell you just based on body language, I don't think anybody wants the season to be over more than McIlroy. I think he's playing golf. He's going to, you know, run out to do what he has to do with the FedEx Cup playoffs and then to finish up on the DP World Tour. But he's very happy. It's not a Ryder Cup year. And he's probably just looking forward to next year at this point. Xander is a little bit more interesting. I don't feel like he was wildly confident with his game coming in here for some reason, which is odd considering he's coming off a victory at Royal Troon. But he never seemed to have sort of that confidence that we saw out of him at Valhalla and then again at the Open Championship. And so that one doesn't concern me near as much.
No, I think that feels like sort of a one-off. He'd sort of slightly gotten off. He mentioned he sort of reverted to some of his old swing tendencies. He's going to have his swing coach, Chris Como, on the horn here shortly to make sure his game is in fine fettle for the FedEx Cup playoffs, which again, begin in 2 weeks' time. Quick shout outs to Tommy Fleetwood with the silver medal. I think he'll take a lot of confidence, Rex, from that final round 66, the way that he putted on the final day. That has sort of been missing in his career, the reason why he's sort of been outplayed by so many players in the game's biggest events. No one was going to track down Scotty with that flawless 62 that he shot on Sunday. But I do think Tommy Fleetwood, I think it's more clear than ever that he is better positioned for a big title as Sunday showed. Hideki was a factor all week long, 24 birdies tied for the most in the field. Victor Perez back 9-29 to finish fourth. I thought that was really cool to see. And I loved seeing, Rex, the emotion from Tom Kim, trying desperately to win a medal. He says it wasn't necessarily because he was trying to avoid the mandatory military sentence, which he would service that he has to have for South Korea before he turns the age of 35. But you could see sort of that, how much that weighed on him, as well as sort of the hard work that he's put in over the past couple of months. What were your, as we look ahead to the women, and I know we'll have a preview podcast on Tuesday afternoon with the women now starting on Wednesday in Paris, what will be your sort of defining memories from the men's competition from the week that was?
Well, you have to start with the crowds. And again, you pointed out that in Rio, it was a little bit different. It was noon. You didn't know it's Brazil's not a golfing nation. So you didn't really get the reaction that you would have expected with golf going back in the Olympics. Then with COVID in Tokyo, you didn't have any crowds at all. This was special. This was 30,000 people a day. It was sold out. It was just this amazing, amazing scene that, again, 18 is the only thing you can compare it to. And I think everybody I talked to was just stunned by the reaction that you got. I texted a tour official that going back in the day, going back to early 2011, 2010, when the powers that be wanted to try to lobby the IOC to get in the Olympics. This was the who sort of was on the front lines. He was trying to do the lobby. And I just sent him a text message congratulating him and said, you know, you should take your victory lap now and enjoy your flowers because this is special. And he gave me, he sent me back a long text message explaining that this is exactly what they promised the IOC back in 2011, that they promised them that the top players would buy into it. They promised them that the competition would be compelling, and they promised them that the fans would come out in droves. And we got all three things.
Yeah, I still think there's potential for maybe a mixed team event, which is on the table for the IOC to consider for 2028. I do think it's probably something lacking.
I wasn't going to do this, but I need to clean this up from the podcast the other day. Just to be clear, you wanted to double down for whatever reason and say that if there is a mixed team event with the men and the women starting in 2028, that there had to be a day off in between for them to practice together, which meant it wouldn't start till Tuesday, and then they would play Tuesday and Wednesday. That will absolutely not happen. If there is a mixed team event, it will be Monday and Tuesday after the men. There will not be a day built in.
So the men and the women will play an alternate shot format, having not practiced together that week. That's what you're saying?
I mean, if the women come in the week before, like a lot of women did this event. But if you go back to last Sunday, there was probably more women on the golf course than there were men. This tournament, yes, in theory, you could practice. I'm not going to add 3 days to the event for them, because I can tell you right now, adding 2 days is probably going to be a non-starter for most of them.
Yeah, it seems like a tricky situation. I do hope they figure it out, because I do think it could be a grand slam. I do think there's some sort of missing component with the team, but I don't think anyone, Rex, come 2028 in LA, is going to be complaining about what is the same old stale 72-hole stroke play format. As Sunday at Le Golf National showed, it is plenty good enough when you have the best players in the world together and a compelling stage for all of that action. All right, that is going to do it for this edition of the Golf Channel Podcast with Rex and Lav. In the meantime, you guys on the drill, nbcsports.com/golf for all the latest news, notes, and updates. Rex will be continuing to stay in Paris. Groundhog Day for him, the exact same format for the women's competition. Live from starts early Monday morning, which Rex will be a part of. And again, the women's competition begins on Wednesday morning here in the States. 3 a.m. concludes on Saturday. So we will have a preview podcast on Tuesday afternoon looking ahead to the women's competition, where Lydia Ko, Nelly Korda, Rose Zhang, Celine Boutier, the home country woman, will try and be getting a gold, just as Victor Perez was trying to do so valiantly in front of the home crowd. All right, that's going to do it. Thanks for listening. Thanks for the support. We'll talk to you guys in a couple of days.